When my son was 5 years old, we moved from England to America, and I put him into baseball because I was trying to live out my unfulfilled dreams through him. And about 2 weeks into the baseball season, he sat down in tears with his mother and I, and he said, "I want to quit." And we said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I suck at baseball." And my wife looked at me and said, essentially with her eyes, "Your problem." And it was really interesting because as a coach, you would think that, well, the way you coach somebody is you tell them, "Go get them, Tiger. You can do it. It's up to you. You can make it." But that wasn't what occurred to me from my inner wisdom, my inner knowing, my innate intelligence in that moment. What actually occurred to me was to say to him, "You're right. You do suck." I said, "The question is, do you want to get good?" Now, Oliver didn't know something. He didn't realize something that, in fact, most of us don't realize, which is that skills are not innate. They're learned. We're not born able to walk, but to learn to walk is innate in us. We're not born able to play a sport, but to learn to play a sport is innate. We're not born playing instruments, but to learn to play instruments is innate. We're not born able to do very much at all, but we're born able to learn. And that learning curve, that skill development curve, is natural. It's built into the system. And the only thing that gets in the way, the only thing that makes lack of skill seem like an oppressive obstacle instead of just a fact of life that you have to develop skill over time, is that we have some interesting ideas about what skill is and whether or not we can develop it and where it comes from. So with Oliver, my son, I said to him, "Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to throw 50 throws every day. We're going to do 50 hits off the tee, and I'm going to throw the ball to you 50 times. And we're going to do that for a month. And if at the end of the month you still want to quit, you can quit." Well, his eyes had kind of lit up by then, because it had never occurred to him that being good at baseball wasn't genetic, that it was something that within whatever native ability you have, you could absolutely develop and get better at and better at and better at. Well, within the month, he was the best kid on the team, simply because he practiced more. And suddenly the idea of quitting wasn't there, because suddenly lack of skill didn't seem like an obstacle that was difficult to overcome. It just seemed like a practical thing to be dealt with, to develop the skill. So we might hear a story like the story of Oliver, my son, and go, "Oh, well, that's cute, you know, but I know better. When I say that skill is an obstacle for me, it's a real obstacle. I mean, I'm just, doesn't matter. I'm never going to get better than this." But we don't take into account that our sense of how good we are at something is often only meaningful in relation to how good we think we're supposed to be. The radio producer Ira Glass said, "Nobody tells this to people who are beginners. I wish someone told me. All of us who do creative work, we get into it because we have good taste. But there is this gap. For the first couple years you make stuff, it's just not that good. It's trying to be good. It has potential, but it's not. But your taste, the thing that got you into the game, is still killer. And your taste is why your work disappoints you. A lot of people never get past this phase. They quit. Most people I know who do interesting creative work went through years of this. We know our work doesn't have this special thing that we want it to have. We all go through this. And if you're just starting out, or you're still in this phase, you gotta know it's normal. And the most important thing you can do is do a lot of work. Put yourself on a deadline so that every week you'll finish one story. It's only by going through a volume of work that you'll close that gap, and your work will be as good as your ambitions. And I took longer to figure out how to do this than anyone I've ever met. It's gonna take a while. It's normal to take a while. You've just gotta fight your way through." So often when somebody comes to me and they say, "Well, I'm just not good enough. I can't be good enough. I'm not a natural. This isn't in me. I'm not the kind of, I'm not musical. I'm not creative. I'm not athletic. I'm not whatever it is you've decided that you're not. It's just a misunderstanding of the nature of skill. And it's a misunderstanding of what's innate in us. Because what is innate, natural to the system, native to the system, is this incredible intelligence, which not only gives you this real-time guidance, but is also made to learn. So my godson is 9 years old, and he's a tennis prodigy, and he's plays against kids, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and he's ranked, he's a nationally ranked tennis player. And his skills are actually really advanced for his age. But emotionally, he's 9 years old. And so sometimes on the court, when the game's not going his way, he mishits the ball, he does something, he makes an unforced error, he collapses, he has an emotional fit. And his parents asked me to talk to him. And to be honest, I didn't really know what I was going to say to him, because I don't usually coach 9-year-olds. But I thought, well, I've got this innate intelligence in me, so maybe when I sit down with him, something will occur to me. And the first thing that actually occurred to me was not to sit down with him. So we went for a walk. We took my dog out for a walk, and we walked up on a dirt road near where I live. And as we're walking up the dirt road, a car comes by, and it kicks up a huge cloud of dust. And we're coughing, and we've got our mouths covered, and I get an idea. And I say, hey, buddy, don't move. Watch the dust. And of course, what happens is what you'd expect to happen, because you understand dust and gravity, is within about a minute, the dust had all settled back down, and the air was clear. And I said to him, hey, this is what happens inside your mind. It's what happens inside all our minds, is a thought comes by and it disturbs us, and it kicks up a bunch of other thinking, and it makes it uncomfortable, and it makes it a little bit hard to see, and it feels like we got to do something about it, and it feels upsetting, and it feels disruptive. But if you just wait a minute, it'll settle back down, and you'll see clearly again. And then we carried on walking, and he was asking me about dust, and he was asking me about how it worked and how does he control the dust. And then another car came, and that one didn't kick up so much dust. And I said, well, look, the problem isn't the cars coming. It's not that you think things while you're playing tennis. It's that you don't control the cars, but you feel like you should. And that's what happens to a lot of us, is when we think we're working on our skills, we're really working on our psychology. We're really trying to control our thoughts and feelings, to control our experience, instead of just practicing whatever it is we want to get good at, making our art, hitting our shots, swinging our swings. Well, as we walked further on, I started asking him, because cars would come by, and I said, well, did you choose that car? He went, no. I said, no, me neither. What about that one? No. And he started to see that, like cars on a road, we don't choose which thoughts come through our mind, and we can't even control how much dust they kick up. But if we understand that that's all that's going on, we can enjoy our walk regardless of the cars. So he started to ask me, he said, well, what about if, like, I'm okay if I mishit the ball, that doesn't bring up much dust. But if there's a shot that I know I should make and I miss it, well, that brings up a lot of dust. And I said, well, does it? Does it always? And he stopped and he thought about it and he said, well, no, not always. And I said, yeah, we can't even predict how much dust is going to get kicked up by our thinking. But I said, what would happen if you stopped the person driving the car and you made him drive back and forth and back and forth and back and forth in front of you? And he said, well, a lot of dust. And I said, right. And that's what happens when we go over how much we're struggling and how hard it is and how we're never going to do it. We're just driving that car back and forth and back and forth and back and forth over the same bit of dirt road in our head. So he said, so, well, what do I do? And I said, well, you want to play tennis, right? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, why don't you play tennis and not worry about what's going on in your head or how upset you are or how much dust there is? And he kind of looked at me a bit like, I could do that? And so I said, well, look, next time the dust comes along, I want to show you something. So sure enough, car comes along, there's dust. I said, stay and try and like pick out every bit of dust. And so we're picking out the dust bits and we're like looking at the dust. And when the dust settled, I said, do you notice how we didn't get anywhere? And he went, yeah. And I said, okay, so let's keep going. Well, next time a car came along and the dust came up, I said, just keep walking. And you know what happened? We walked right through the dust because it's just dust. Now, you can probably see that with dust, but you probably don't see that thought works the same way. We have a lot of thoughts that go through our head. Some of them we like, a lot of them we don't like, and some of them just seem completely random. And some of them kick up a lot of dust. They really kind of get us going. They rile us up, they worry us, they concern us. And the tendency is to want to go back over them and really work those ones and worry them and think about them some more and try and figure them out and try and overcome them and try and stop them. But if you just keep going, the thoughts will settle all by themselves. The feelings will come and go. And you can get really good at whatever it is you want to get really good at. So here's your assignment for today. And I hope you'll find it a fun one. I want you to scrunch up a few bits of paper. And if you're ecologically conscious, these can be papers that were going to be thrown out anyways. And I want you to start practicing trashketball. So if you've never played trashketball, it's remarkably like basketball, but with a trash basket. And so just get your balls of crunched up paper and throw them at the basket. But here's what I want you to notice as you do it. I want you to notice all the different things that come up inside you. All the, well, this is stupid, or hey, I'm pretty good at this, or oh, well, I'm never going to be able to do this. And just keep practicing. And I want you to notice all the feelings come up from like, wow, I'm going to be a trashketball master, to, oh, this is why, I don't even know why I'm doing this. This wasn't even on my list of obstacles. And just keep practicing until you've made 100 shots. That's not going to really take you that long. It just sounds like it is. And just notice, after you've made 100 shots, two things. One, how much better at trashketball are you? And two, how little did it matter what you thought and felt along the way?